The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Percent Hockey with Millard and Shannon. It's arrived. The Stanley Cup Final is upon us. Ready to go.
Has the break bothered you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I got on with some other things in my life, and now I have to pause that. And when I pause that stuff, I get in trouble around the house. That's why the break has bothered me. Because there's about three, right now, unfinished tasks in my house, including installing a microwave oven, and the microwave's just going to sit there for a couple of days because I'm back into hockey.
Only three? You should come to my house.
Yeah.
And we're always in double digits at my house.
We're a little more realistic around here.
I'm serious. We're in double digits all the time. I've had five messages since we started recording. So,
and this break, It's okay because nothing's underway. You pause, get media day, you get all excited again, we get into the series. Where it's really going to be a challenge, John, is around game three, where there's 5 days with one game.
Yeah. Well, we have the award show now, at least.
Right. And you were wondering about that, what was going to happen, because we had the Selke and the Clancy awarded to Sasha Barkov, and we're like, okay, well, they haven't announced a schedule, but we do get an awards ceremony in the middle of the Stanley Cup Final.
On the 12th, yeah. So that will be but I still don't understand why Barkov was awarded given his two trophies before they traveled to Edmonton. The only answer I could assume was he's the only guy from either the Oilers or the Panthers to win awards, so we should get them out of the way so he can focus on the Stanley Cup Final. What do you think?
I think it's more the Clancy's not going to be part of the actual awards ceremony.
But the Selke should be.
You can't jam in the mall. And he's right there, and the Selke, and I'm not sure the Selke necessarily merits being part of that award ceremony because of my disdain towards the voting process. So,
the voting process, I think we touched on this a little bit.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby got three votes. He got one fourth place vote.
Yeah.
What are they one smoking?
Vote. He got one vote, but 3 points.
For three points. What are they smoking?
Yeah.
Seriously. Sidney Crosby, who has been, in my opinion, the best two-way player in the game for the last 5 years. It makes no sense to me.
No.
It makes no sense.
Four Florida Panthers got votes for the Selke Trophy. They should not allow a goal through the first three games of the final.
I call that recency bias. How's that?
I know. I agree.
But, I just don't get it.
Do you have and Jeff's just logging on, so we'll get to him in a second. Jeff Blashill from the Chicago Blackhawks, who joins us. He's on the show notes. Do you have
hold on? There are show notes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, when you click on the podcast, it says it's a great write-up. Today's is going to be Jeff Blashill loves being with Millard and joins Shannon on 100% Hockey. Do you have an idea of which team's going to be better in the early going coming off this break between Edmonton and Florida?
No, I think the easy answer is Edmonton. When you consider that the energy that will be produced in that building, like quite frankly, right now, that is the craziest building in the National Hockey League. It is wild.
Yeah. It's different, and it's not just hyperbole. It's different.
No, and I mean, we're talking about the costumes, the face painting. Tonight, I think there have been parties to plan what everybody's wearing to go into downtown Edmonton. And, you know, it's just after 6 o'clock local start in Edmonton. So that means people will not only enjoy the game, but they'll party into the night, I guarantee you. It will be it'll be one of the great atmospheres of all time when you consider the hype in Edmonton for this Stanley Cup final.
Follow me here. Most irrelevant first game of a Stanley Cup final ever will occur in 2025, because both these teams have proven the ability to shrug off any type of early series deficit. We'll just get into it tonight.
Well, and when you look at Florida, Florida has never had home ice in a series yet this year. Mm-hmm. And yet have been pretty successful of what's gone on in these four series. Now this fourth series that they're going to play. It's crazy.
Jeff Blashill is on deck. We'll slide over there and get his opinion. Just does he watch the Stanley Cup final? And curious what the process was like getting back behind the bench as a head coach in the National Hockey League. Jeff Blashill joins us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
This is exciting. Jeff Blashill joins us on 100% Hockey. When did you realize that this was going to be a real possibility?
It's hard to kind of go back on the timeline here. As I started, I had a conversation with Kyle Davidson a little bit after our season was over here in Tampa. And that conversation I thought went pretty well. And it led to a pretty intensive Zoom interview with Kyle and his management group, and it certainly felt like things were headed in a good direction. And and then it went into an in-person interview in Chicago, and I thought we really connected, myself and what I felt in terms of a vision of how to help this group get to the next level and eventually hopefully get to become an elite hockey team. And I think that vision was shared with them. So As we kind of just worked through all that, it felt like it was leading towards a good marriage, so to speak, and ultimately it worked out great.
Without divulging like really top secret stuff, when you do an interview, the in person one, do you go position by position, roster place by roster place? Do you go player to player?
You certainly can. I've done a number of interviews and different guys are different management groups are looking for different things. And some want you to go in depth with systematic play and how you play systematically. Certainly some want to discuss the individual players. kind of where you see the players are at, kind of where you kind of feel, you know, this group can, you know, how it fits together and the pieces potentially needed and all that kind of stuff. I think the bigger piece on all this is more, you know, kind of the leadership side of it. To me is probably the most important thing with coaching is, you know, your ability to lead your group and, you know, part of the job as a head coach is hiring great assistants. And so they're going to have a say on the type of systems we play, certainly, not just schematically, but from a foundational standpoint. You know, I think the management and coach want to be eye to eye, but you know, it's the little parts of your systems will change at times, but it can be pretty in depth and again, kind of each management group's different.
How do you sound like you know what you're talking about without being a braggart in these?
Yeah, things? That's a good question. You know, you don't you certainly want to, you know, feel
you confident. Need to sell yourself, right? You need to sell yourself
for sure. And I think, you know, I think at some point in life you get comfortable just being who you are and getting and being confident with what you believe in without, you know, it being all knowing. And I'm not an all knowing person. And you know, I know what I believe in and I know what I think is the right thing. But it doesn't mean it's the only way or anything like that. So, you know, I just try to be honest in this, you know, as I've kind of gone through it over the course of the last 3 years, certainly gotten very comfortable with just saying what I believe in and saying what I'm about. And if it's the right fit, awesome. And if it's not the right fit, it wouldn't work out anyway. So, you know, I just think being kind of true to who you are and what your beliefs are and selling yourself, but really just selling what you believe in more than anything else.
Every coach has got their philosophy or how they want to play. Do you go into it realizing that they will have to mold to you, or do you leave yourself open to how the manager would want to play?
Yeah, you know, I think every management group's a little bit different. I think that's where you got to be real honest in the interview process about what you are as a coach and what your core beliefs are. And you know, sometimes that gets right down to, do you play a, you know, kind of man-on-man D-zone system or do you play a zone D-zone system? Like it can get as finite as that. And honestly, even as much as like, how do you play two-on-ones and those types of things? And, you know, that is certainly some managers want to get to that point to make sure that they're at least on the same page and that when they're sitting up top and I'm on the bench, that we're not on two separate hemispheres of how we want to play hockey. And I do think, when you hire people, and I found this in hiring assistants, you have a way better chance to have a successful collaboration if you see things kind of on the same wavelength and not in different hemispheres. Because if it's in different hemispheres, the you know, the back and forth really doesn't mean much because you can't even get close to the same kind of answer. But when you're kind of on the same wavelength, you can have disagreements, but you're still close in terms of what your core beliefs are. So again, for me, it's, you know, as you go through these interviews, I just think it's real important to not necessarily say to the manager, well, not at all, say to the manager what they want to hear in terms of how you're going to play, but more of what you are and what you are as a coach and what you believe in foundationally, what you believe in systematically. And then it's up to the, you know, the management group to determine if it's the right fit or not. And you know, I just think if you're kind of desperate to get the job and you sell something you're not, it's never going to work out.
Did you ever wonder if another head coaching job was going to come your way?
Well, I think you always wonder that. These are, you know, there's only 32 of them, and I have a huge respect for how many great coaches there are out there and the decisions, the tough decisions that managers have to make to hire coaches. I would tell you, John, I got real comfortable in a spot in my head where I was going to do what I kind of did on the way up in coaching, and that's just do the very best job I could at the job I was in, which was an assistant coach here in Tampa. And, you know, and if you, my belief as I was kind of coming up through the ranks in college and junior and even the American League was, don't chase jobs, just do the very, very best job you can. And ultimately, you know, if you're impressive enough, that word will travel and somebody will give you an opportunity. And that's kind of, you know, the where I got to here, where, you know, when I first got fired in Detroit, I wanted a job right away. And, you know, you kind of have that competitiveness where you want to go get that next job right away and prove you can do a good job and all that. in reality, the 3 years I spent here in Tampa was great for me for a number of reasons. One is just a reset. And part of that reset for me was, again, just getting to where, you know, I love being an assistant here in Tampa. I love the day-to-day job. So enjoy it and enjoy the process of it. Enjoy everything that went along in that job. And if another job comes, you know, if a head coaching opportunity comes along, great. And just, I guess, make sure you're super prepared for it. And the 3 years I spent here has certainly helped me be very confident that I'm prepared for this opportunity.
What did you learn from John Cooper?
A lot. You know, probably we could fill a podcast on that.
Okay. Well, that's all good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. Good. So you guys won't have to, talk the rest of the way. This will be great. First off, I would say, I learned from John Cooper. I learned from Jeff Halpern. I learned from Rob Zettler. I learned from the whole coaching staff. I learned from Nikita Kucherov. I learned from Stevens. All the great players that are here. You learn from the whole environment. A couple of things I think is one. First, you get a chance to kind of, as I said, reset, sit in a different chair, see how things are done with a different program. John and I have known each other for 20 plus years. We've been friends for a long time. We've talked a lot of hockey, but we've never been in the same coaching staff except for like early in our time with Team Michigan way back in the day. So, I mean, at that point, I think I was the head coach on those teams, so I never got a chance to see him work. So you get a chance to kind of reset. And as you reset, you look and you see how a different program that's been very, very successful, it just come off their third straight cup final, how they do things. And part of that is reflecting and saying, you know what? Some of the stuff we did in Detroit was pretty good. We just maybe weren't in a spot from the rebuild standpoint where we were going to win as much as we wanted to. But some of the stuff we did was good. And then you learn, man, there's some different things I take from here. A couple of things that stand out to me. And one is probably just a reminder to me. And that's the importance of being able to hold your guys accountable, being able to be hard on them when you need to, be demanding on them, but make sure you're connecting with them as people. And I think ultimately that's what Coop does better than, you know, as good as anybody in the league is that connection with his players. And I think when I've been at my best, that's what I've done. So it was a good reminder how important that was. So it wasn't necessarily a learned process per se. It was just a great reminder to watch, you know, one of the very, very best coaches in the league do it and remind myself that how important that connection is as you're, you know, how important those relationships are so that it allows you to be demanding. You know, another thing that in this, and I think John's grown into this here in Tampa, and he would tell you this, you know, when he first got here, I think he did everything, you know, every aspect of the coaching, you know, every system, every meeting, all those things. Now he delegates a lot. You know, I think he's really comfortable with his staff here. He was prior to me getting here. And I think he remained that once I was here, and he delegated a lot to us and as assistant coaches. And that did a couple different things. One, from an assistant coaching side, one, it invigorates you. When you know you're making a big impact, you tend to work harder. It's just reality. You're invigorated by that. And two, it gave us a little bit bigger voice in the room, which I think is important. But from his perspective, it allowed him two things. One, to make sure whenever things went poor, he could make sure he was getting the temperature of the room. He wasn't burying his head in the video to find the answers. He let us bury our head in the video to find the answers. And he went and talked to the people that mattered the most. And two, you know, it's a long season. And if you're running every meeting, man, your voice gets old. You know, like I remember, you know, being in game 76 in Detroit thinking to myself, I'm sick of hearing myself talk. I can't imagine what these guys are. And so now he doesn't talk as much in meetings, but when he talks, it matters. He can grab the guy's attention a little bit more. So that's just a couple things that I learned. But, you know, you just go through these things where, you know, the environment here is kind of the environment I like where, you know, we'd have open dialogue and debate, and you know, I can at times be a little argumentative, and you know, I'd have arguments with the assistants here who I love, and but it was all to try to find the best answer for us to find the best possible way to help our team win, and it was when you're in those kind of environments, it just fuels growth, I think.
So, are you more open as a head coach now going forward than you would have been in the past?
What do you mean by open?
Dialogue. You were just talking about
arguments and debate. And I don't know whether you were or you weren't, but but just feeding off that that comment about Cooper.
Yeah, I would say that I think I've always welcomed that. Like the my leadership style has always been probably similar to Coop's. Like I want to hear what everybody has to say. I want to hear everybody's opinion. That's where I talked about kind of being on the same hemisphere as people. If you're in the same hemisphere and they can argue back and forth with you, it means something to you. And so I've always kind of wanted to hear that and created that that great kind of dialogue that you have. You know, I'll go back to the book Good to Great, which was probably my favorite book I've read in terms of organizational success. You know, and that book talks about the great companies and their meetings where they were, you know, they could get into heated discussions, but it wasn't about ego. It wasn't about being right. It was about finding the best answer. And that's kind of always been my approach. And I think if you asked, you know, the different assistant coaches I've had, they would say that. And I think we all grew because of it. And that part of it was similar to what I've done, you know, that we had here that I've done before.
That's the second time recently that we've heard a reference to that book, John.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's Malcolm Gladwell, right?
Yeah, but
yeah, I mean, Malcolm recently, Gladwell.
No, it's John Collins. John Collins.
Oh, it's John Collins. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I mean the concept that has been part of that whole leadership style is one that is prevalent in. Not just in sports, but in business as well. Correct, Jeff?
Yeah, what I loved about that book, to be honest with you, is, you know, I find a lot of these books, and even if you go to conferences and you know, any of this stuff where they talk about leadership, you're usually hearing the best version of themselves and what it looks like when it's at its very best. And what this book was for me was basically just a study. And they just studied companies. They studied companies that were good and stayed good or went poor. And what, you know, the companies that were good and became great over a long period of time and just started to look for commonalities. And I honestly, to this day, is probably the book I've liked the most in terms of just helping an organizational success. Because what's, you know, organizational success isn't particular to sports, obviously. It's it might be a church, it might be a business, it might be any type of organization, and there's different commonalities. And the one that stood out, and I'll go back to when I was an assistant coach at Miami of Ohio, and that was a huge impact for me from 2002 to 2008. I was there with Rico Blasi and Chris Bergeron, and that's when I actually read that book, and it was so impactful to what we were trying to do at that time at Miami, as we were trying to build that program from good to great, and a lot of life lessons from that.
So so that we're all on the same page, it's Jim Collins.
Jim.
John Collins is the one of the owners of the New York Islanders, and he'll be thrilled that we mentioned his name. Just for the record,
Jim won't be though. Jim, actually, I have a signed copy of the book from Jim, so he's going to be disappointed in me. But that's life, I guess.
This is a fascinating discussion. How do you transform those business philosophies to sports? Because sports is a different hierarchy than business is. Or is it?
Well, I mean, I think they all have their, you know, again, I think it's just organization more than just business, but I think they all have their unique hierarchies. And you know, in sports, you know, like on a hockey in our business, we have, you know, there's from a hockey operation standpoint, sometimes there's president, there's general manager, there's a coach, but you know, the management's in charge of certain things and ultimately is in charge of everything. But the coach, you know, I think in the good situations, the coach is in charge of, you know, the day-to-day hockey, how we play, the personnel decisions and all that. You know, the players are the most important people in the organization. They're the ones ultimately, honestly, in most ways, like they're the most impactful from winning and losing, but there still has to be a hierarchy of who's in charge. You know, and so in the day-to-day hockey, I guess operations, it's the coach, and on the bigger picture, it's the man, you know, it's the manager. But those things are true in business, you know, depending on you know, what type of teams each business has. And I mean, I've used it, you know, that book in a couple different areas. You know, the book speaks to a thing called the Stockdale paradox, which is Admiral Stockdale was the highest ranking prisoner of war in the Vietnam War. And, you know, he just talked about his time, you know, basically as they interviewed him, which prisoners of war were most likely to die and to not make it. And he said, oh, that's easy. The optimists, you know, because they thought they were getting out of Christmas would come, and they thought they're getting out of Easter would come. And then they started to lose hope. And you know, I remember when I was in Detroit, we talked about the Stockdale paradox, which they called, which was, you know, basically confront your brutal truths, but never lose hope in the end. And, you know, so there's a lot of ways, I think, you know, that particular book, but those books can shape you and help in your leadership. Cause it's, to me, coaching is much, much more about people and leading people than it is about X's and O's.
I haven't read that book, but I just ordered it during the last answer off Amazon, because I got to figure out what you guys are talking about here.
Jim will be happy.
Jim's going to rock this. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more with Jeff as we continue on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelthy providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelthy can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
Can you get back to yelling at officials now that you're a head coach?
I've hopefully calmed down in the last 3 years, and yeah, it's actually a good thing just to be able to learn to just sit back and not have to yell.
Because assistants are supposed to be, for a lot of times, seen but not heard on the bench, right?
Correct, 100%. So I would say that part of it is a good quality to practice as I'm going back to being a head coach.
So where are you with your assistants? What I would assume you're going through the protocol of hiring guys or interviewing guys. Where are you with that?
No, actually, it happened pretty quick. I was able to, I kept and retained Anders Sorensen, who was the interim head coach. Anders and I have known each other for years, going back to when I was at Miami, been assistant. He was coming up through the ranks in Chicago, Mission Hockey. And so we've known each other a long time. I have great belief in him. He's really smart. Hired Michael Pekka, who was with the Rangers the last couple of years. And hired Mike Vellucci, who was with Pittsburgh the last couple of years.
Well, you hired Mike. Oh, yeah. Good. I didn't realize that. So I just saw him on the bench. You must have been happy. I saw him on the bench in Stockholm for Team USA.
I was thrilled. First off, like what an awesome win for that group. You know, somebody that's done a lot of those worlds. Man, it's a long time coming, and when that puck went in the net, all I could think of was Jimmy Johansson, who was our, you know, longtime leader, who passed away way too young, who was a good friend of mine, who I was so happy for them. So, but yeah, no, I'm excited about our staff. I like the group. I think it's a good they complement each other. They all have their good strengths. I'm real excited about it.
So I look at your roster, and you have some really good young players, a young core. When you think of Vlasic and Nazar and obviously Bedard, I would suggest it might be like herding cats, though.
You know, I don't know. I guess in a sense, there's going to be, I think patience is needed, you know, in a sense that there's going to be, when you have a lot of young players, especially we're going to have a really young D Corps, you know, there's, you've got to kind of help them learn through some of their mistakes, you know, in teach them through some of the mistakes. I think, that's part of the process, but I don't mind that. I'd rather have a chance, you know, to work with really talented players. And if they're young, they're young. And I think we have a lot of really talented players. And you know, one of the things I love in coaching is helping mold players and helping them get better and watching the team get better. And just that intrinsic feeling of that is awesome. And we all love winning, you know, winning. But, you know, that feeling of watching a group get better and growing is, to me, honestly, probably why I got into coaching in the first place. So, you know, it's a young group. But as you said, they're really talented at each position. And I also think we have a good group of, you know, veterans. You know, I've talked to all of them. I think it's a group led by Nick Foligno who want to see this you know, rebuild start to, you know, take hold and start to get traction, head in the right direction. And they're real committed to that process of it. And I think they're committed to being a part of it. And, you know, I use the words having good Papa Bears. And what I mean by that is, you know, I saw this when I went to the American League. You just want vets who are going to try to help grow the young guys and not hold them down and you know, afraid they're going to take their spot. So I think we have a good kind of mix of those two things. And, you know, again, I'd rather have a chance to coach real talented players. If they're young, they're young.
Have you been able to witness firsthand a veteran player be a little standoffish to a young guy? Because in privately, they may act differently than on the ice or on the bench, because I've heard both ways, and guys can be mean, but guys can be so accommodating and useful in bringing kids along.
And you can sometimes be both, you know. I think like I don't think there's an ill, I don't think, you know, yes, have I witnessed that? Yes. You know, and that's, you know, sometimes in the American League too, and in the NHL, where, listen, when you're a player and some young guy's getting a chance that maybe, you know, as a veteran, you don't know if he totally deserves, that maybe he didn't have to go through all the pain, you know, the things you had to go through to get to that same chance. I think there, you know, that's an easy resentment, you know, that happens for sure. And then if you're an older player who's, you know, hanging on to kind of hang on to your spot, you know, you're not excited about somebody else taking your spot. I mean, that's just human nature. Like, who would be, you know, and that's where I think you're really important that you get the right mix of guys when you have this young a team that want to, they want to be a part of this. They want to do a good job, but they also want to see the young guys grow, and just different people are wired differently. So, you know, I think of, you know, there's times where veteran players, rightfully so, are getting on younger players whose habits maybe aren't there yet. They just have to make sure that their habits are great. You know, it's you can't get on guys for things that you don't do. And, you know, I've had conversations with veteran players as you know, as they're, you know, kind of helping lead young players, is, you know, like, if you're work your butt off every day, if your compete's great every day, you can get on guys when they don't work and compete. But if you make a lot of mistakes, it's hard to get on guys about making mistakes, you know? So, like, I just think there's a balance there. And ultimately, you know, it's my job, to, you know, really be the one who kind of leads the direction in that. And, you know, hope you have a group of veteran players that can be a good extension of the coaching staff though.
Reunited with Tyler Bertuzzi. What's that going to be like?
You know, I'm excited about it. I'm a big Bert fan. Tyler's, I honestly think the world of Tyler. He's a great competitor. He wants to win. He works hard. He's just the kind of guy. I think he's a winning hockey player. You know, he came to me when I was in the American League in Grand Rapids in the playoffs. The first time we really ever coached him, and I think we were down like 2-0 to Toronto, and we came back to win the best of 5 series. And he was a huge part of that. Like, he to me, is a winning hockey player, you know, and so I'm excited about it. I had a good conversation with him. We're going to get together this summer up in Northern Michigan. We both are going to be up there at a period of time, and we'll have a deeper conversation. But He's got a great heart. He wants to win. So I'm a big fan.
I love the way that he's doing the drop knee down and sliding that puck in and giving himself like 4 feet to put the puck in on the power play. Yeah. I think it's genius. I don't know whether that's been told to him or whether it's self-taught, but I think he's onto something there.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And he's there's a few guys that kind of do it around the league in different ways. You know, Marchand did kind of something similar. He used to do in Boston a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's something I think actually more and more guys are doing. But you're right. Like, why would you just rely on your stick blade? Why wouldn't you, utilize more, the whole, create the, as you said, 4 feet way better. So yeah, I think it's awesome.
So the elephant in the room is Connor Bedard. The ups and downs of last season, we actually – Darren will laugh at this. We had Kyle on just after Four Nations, just after he had his heart surgery. And I said, Connor's had a tough season, and there are stories going around the league that Connor's tough to manage. How do you approach a guy that has a tremendous upside and has, has been called a generational player, but probably hasn't performed to the expectation of that level yet? And how do you get the best out of him?
First thing I would say is, I guess the number one, let me start by this. Here's what I've heard about Connor Bedard. He loves hockey. The words that somebody said to me was, I've never been around a guy who loves hockey as much as him. And he wants to win. Oh, I'm getting locked out.
It's
here,
okay.
Boys. I'm in the dark. So if you're those two things, that's a great starting point, like without a shadow of a doubt. And listen, does he have things to learn and to grow in his game? 100%. But you show me a good young star, and I'll show you a guy, a guy who grew up as a star. I'll show you a guy that has things to learn at the NHL level in terms of how to become a winning hockey player. What happens with all these elite players is they can play a certain way in college or junior and have great success themselves, and their teams will win because they're better than everybody else by a country mile. And then when you get to a level where you're not better than everybody else by a country mile, you have to learn to do all those things that make you a great two-way player. I watched it with, I coached Jack Eichel in multiple world championships. And there was a time where a lot of people said a lot of things about Jack Eichel. And guess what? He became a great player. I thought arguably their best player when they won the Stanley Cup. And if you go through, almost young guy by young guy, and honestly, if you kind of look just point production wise at Connor's first 2 years and compare him to some of the very best players in the league, the Nathan MacKinnons, the Jack Eichels, the guys like that, there's only a couple, and it might be McDavid and Crosby who are much greater than that. So from just a pure point standpoint, I think his years have been, I don't think they're out of line of what other great players have had. From a learning to become a great winning hockey player, I think that's what every young guy has to go through. Matthews, McDavid, all these guys. So that's ultimately our job as the coaching staff, is to help him learn how to produce at the high level while still playing that winning hockey. And that's the key to it, is you can't just produce points. You got to do it and play winning hockey. And we'll get them there. And if you love hockey and you want to win, you will get there. And I hope he's strong in his beliefs. That can make it sometimes not harder to deal with. It just means you have to connect with them, but you want people that are strong in their beliefs. Those are the ones that end up being the best. Mm-hmm. So all those qualities to me, honestly, just excite me for the opportunity.
So how will you manage success next? How will you manage success next year?
That's a good question. What I would say is this. I think the most important thing by a long shot when you're where we're at is building the championship level culture. So what does that mean? That's an easy buzzword. I get that. What I'll manage is, or what I'll try to monitor is, have we created a high championship level standard, and are we holding our players to that standard? Okay, so from a coaching staff, are we doing that? And are the guys getting to understand that? Are they starting to adhere to that, where they are carrying themselves on a daily basis to meet that high standard? And then are our best players taking steps towards becoming winning hockey players? If you look around the league, all the great cultures, their best players are the ones that lead it, and everybody else follows suit. And so if we can do those two things, then we're headed in the right direction. And I referenced in my press conference, I got to watch, one of the more successful football coaches in the NFL today, Dan Campbell, come into Detroit, talked a lot about culture, had a fiery way about him. But if you remember his first year, they didn't win. And what he did do, though, was implement culture. And that has now paid off in spades over the last couple of years. And that's kind of the same approach. So for me, it's not necessarily, listen, do we want to win more than we lose? Of course. Do we want to win a ton? Of course. I have no idea what our ceiling is next year. I won't put a limit on it. I have no idea. But what I know we have to do is create a championship level culture.
So if Connor's playing winning hockey, or any of your prospects, that young group, what does that mean? What does that look like to you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. First, you're honestly, in the simplest sense, you're creating more chances than you're giving up on a shift-by-shift basis. And I know that sounds simple, but it is. That's just reality. So if you are trading chance for chance, to me, that's 50-50 hockey. You don't win in 50-50 hockey. If you're cheating for offense, so you go to a kind of loose puck in, Dylan Larkin will laugh if he's listening to this, and you poke and hope for that loose puck, that's 50-50 hockey. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. That to me is not championship level hockey. If you go in that loose puck battle and you stop on that puck and you make sure you win that puck, now you have it. Now you can create, now you end up dictating the play. That's winning hockey. So all those things like stopping on pucks, playing from the right side, how hard your reloads are coming, both, I guess, transition both ways, offensively and defensively, how those first three steps look like. When you watch that game tonight, when the offensive team turns a puck, whatever, the loose puck recovery in the O-zone and the other team's going the other way, watch how hard everybody reloads. They're going to reload like crazy. That's what championship level hockey looks like. You have to be great defensively to win in the end. You just have to. So learning to be great defensively and creating lots of offense is ultimately what the best teams look like.
Last
can
one.
Can you watch? Go ahead, Darren. Go ahead. You go.
I was just going to say, you start, because mine's sort of out of left field, to wrap it up.
I can't wait.
So you talked about game one of the Stanley Cup final. Can you watch it as a fan, or do you have to watch it as a coach?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. I think I watch it as a fan. I'm a fan of the game but also just kind of, just watching to see how guys are, you just kind of learn things as you go along. So I'll enjoy watching. I'll probably get together with a number of the coaches here. I'm still in Tampa, as you can probably see by the background, but I'll get together with the coaching staff here in Tampa and we'll watch the game and we'll give our 2 cents worth from the cheap seats.
Well, and in fact, that they beat you in the first round doesn't help.
Yeah, that's a tough. That's a tough 2 years in a row. So that is they're a great team. They're a great team, and whatever, it is what it is.
Okay. Left field isn't as bad as it sounds, but the
we'll be the judge of that. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. The interview process, you met with them three times from the sounds of it, Zoom. And does the tone change differently in those three? Is it all business one? Is it more casual the next? Is it X and O's? And are you like the rest of us when you go to a job interview, you're trying to figure out, is this going to be fun? Can I chirp? Can I be myself? Or is this going to be really serious? And you're trying to figure out where that line is.
It's actually an interesting question, because I would say my wife has a saying, I have like two levels, like not fun and kind of fun, never. So, but the reality of if I had to explain to you, for me as a person, I'm either probably really serious or I'm fun. I like to have fun with and laugh and in that. So I kind of got those two divergent things. I think when we start talking about hockey, it's serious. It just generally is serious in any of those situations. I thought Kyle and his group, we ended up going to dinner where I think honestly the purpose of it was just to see how we kind of clicked. And, and as people. And so that was just totally casual. And I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really smart idea by him. And I'm speaking for him. I don't know that that's the case, but it felt like that. And, you know, it was more like, is this a guy that fits in with our group and we want to go to work together on a daily basis with, and both have fun. I mean, life's too short to not enjoy it, you know, and life's too short not to enjoy each other and work with people you really like being around, in my opinion.
Particularly in Chicago, where there are so many great restaurants. Are you kidding me?
No, I can't wait. I love to eat, so I can't wait.
And have you celebrated Western Michigan's triumph? You've got the connection.
Yeah, no, you know, Pat Bourgeois is a good friend of mine. He worked for us at Western, in Grand Rapids, in Detroit. He's a good friend of mine. I was so excited for him. He's done a great job there, outstanding job. And to watch the success they've had year after year, and then it finally culminates in a national championship's amazing. It was awesome to watch the Kathy Beauregard, who hired me. She was the AD at the time. You know, I know she's taken great pride in this. It's just a cool thing to watch kind of build. They made a big commitment to hockey, and so to watch it kind of come to fruition was awesome.
Well, I tell you, I'm sick and tired of hearing about the Broncos from Glenn Healy and Keith Jones. That's all I hear about from those two guys. It's great.
Good for them. Good for them.
Congratulations. Can't wait to watch your stamp and your impact on the Chicago Blackhawks.
All right, guys. We'll see you around.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Saw Jeff earlier this year. He was when Tampa Bay was in Vegas, and didn't get a chance to talk. He was walking into the room right as I turned the corner and saw him, and I thought that...
Actually, he saw you and avoided you. Let's be honest.
Maybe. Yeah,
no, I think that's probably fair.
Two things. The dude's a big guy. Like, a lot bigger than he looks behind the bench. And I'm not even saying that tongue-in-cheek. Some people, like Paul Maurice, big human being, doesn't look like one of those intimidating physical people behind the bench, but he is. The other one is, when I saw Jeff, was I was reminded he carries himself like a head coach. He looks like a head coach.
Yeah. It's funny. So I met Jeff early in his time in Detroit. And it has no reason to know who I am or what I do, but has always remembered my name, has always had will always pause and ask you a question, how you're doing. He's one of the friendliest people in the game, period. And I think that's part of, I think you learn that as a leader on how to manage relationships. And I think he's done a brilliant job, and I'm thrilled to see him back in the National Hockey League as a head coach.
Accountability is going to be a thing that they'll watch, because they've got that young group, and keeping those people in check while not taking away the fun and the freedom of growing in the National Hockey League is always that difficult balancing act when you have a young, talented group.
Well, I think that they, you know, when you look at what the Blackhawks have to do this year, is they have to show signs of growth. Because I do think when you fire a coach, as they did early in the season with Luke Richardson being let go and Anders Sorensen taking over, I think that the growth got stunted. And they were almost, it was almost like a placeholder season, Darren, for them. You know, how do we get
totally
through
agree.
This?
Well, yeah, the Seth Jones situation. Well, yeah,
but
the
how
coach
do we get
situation.
Through this and do a reset in the summer? And so this is now the reset. And when you look at their young guys, I think they've got a really good group of young players.
Yeah.
But they have to start going in the same direction. And that's going to be Jeff's biggest challenge. And, you can't measure success for the Chicago Blackhawks in the 25-26 season by saying, well, they're going to make the playoffs, because they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not. And if they do, he is the greatest miracle worker of all time.
Yeah, it's very negative of you, but okay.
No, I'm a realist. Remember General Stockdale, right? Or Admiral Stockdale, being a realist. It's important to be a realist. And so from that perspective, they have to turn everything around and get everybody pulling in the same direction. Because I do think at times last year in Chicago, for one reason or another, they weren't. But this is now Kyle Davidson's reset. Jeff Blashill is now in charge of the reset, and we will see what happens. And a year from now, we'll be able to judge of whether they're on the right path.
Yeah, and their blue line, Seth Jones left middle of the season. Alec Martinez, our buddy, who's been on 100% hockey, retired. They lost a lot of experience on that backhand. Well, they'll have to.
Now, the good thing is in the Seth Jones trade, I think they did address their goaltending. Mm-hmm. I like Spencer Knight. I think he's a good goaltender. And I think that, for the longest time, even in the Kyle Davidson time, the goaltending was a revolving door. Remember, hard to imagine, but remember, they had Marc-Andre Fleury for 25 games, mm-hmm. right, before they traded him to Minnesota. And so it's been they got Soderblom, they had Peter Mrazek. Goaltending has always been a question mark. I think with Spencer Knight there, they've answered a lot of questions. And you talk about hockey teams, and still strength up the middle, it makes a difference, and goaltending's part of that.
Yeah, we know that. Who would you take, Murray Bannerman or Darren Pang?
For what? To go out for dinner or to play a game?
To play a game.
Okay, to play a game, I'd take Murray Bannerman. To go out to dinner, I'd take Darren Pang.
I watched them as a tandem a few years ago in the outdoor alumni game in St. Louis. Bannerman and Pang were two of the three goaltenders.
I'll tell you what, I did in the 80s when the Blackhawks were a good team but always up against the Edmonton Oilers, Murray Bannerman would probably a little gun shy. He and Tony Esposito are a little gun shy about what was going on in the conference final.
High scoring series that I ever witnessed was one of those Western Conference finals, or it was the Campbell Conference final then. And Bannerman played great.
Lost 9-7.
9-7. Yeah. In the old fiberglass mask. That's a mask that I have to get up for the wall.
On Murray Bannerman?
Yeah, I've got to get a Murray Bannerman
mask. Do you
mask.
Have one?
No, I've got to grab one. Get one.
I know who I'd replace, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah? Who? On my wall of fame. I got Bernie, I got John, I got Wayne, I got Ken. And Bob, goalie Bob.
Well, I'm not replacing you. I'm not replacing Asenza or Garrett or Bernie or Wayne Stevenson.
You're replacing one of my masks?
Well, that would be a start.
Me
and the finish.
I discovered the secret to good goaltending.
What, sitting on the bench?
No, I moved down like three divisions. I'm outstanding now. I spared in a league last night, John. I kid you not. A guy took a shot and he missed the puck and it just dribbled in on me. I'm like, I can handle
this. You missed it?
He missed it.
No, but did you stop it?
Oh, I stopped it, yeah. And I thought, that's my speed. John would be very proud of me right now, and he's not proud of me very often. Thanks, buddy. That was tons of fun. Appreciate you setting it up with Jeff, because he is a guy that I can listen to. The book part, good to great.
Jim Collins.
It just sticks to you, right?
Yeah. It's going to be a fascinating year to watch what he does and how he does it there. And quite frankly, I'm really happy that I think Michael Peck is going to be a really strong asset to him, as is Mike Vellucci. Those are two great assistant coach.
Vellucci,
I was actually hoping Vellucci
too.
Would end up in Vancouver, but he didn't. So. Mm-hmm.
His names have been part of a lot of conversations that I've had
over the last couple of weeks. It kept popping up. So a good hire there by Chicago. Thanks, John. We'll talk to you as we will reminisce about game one of the Stanley Cup final when we next chat.
With Ray Ferraro.
Oh, is Ray coming back?
Yes.
What did he do there? Does he owe you?
No, he just loves being
he's off now. He's done now. So I thought just a golf and a
He might be, but it's been a few days since he's had a microphone in front of him, so he needed a microphone. So
we won't have to talk again. Good for everybody else. We'll talk to you next time on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Bye, John.
Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.